Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of Classes of Mail. My name is Alan Gygax, and today I have, for the first time in a while, I actually have a script to work from. And I also have special guest Michael Brazenly.
Hi everyone.
And I don't know how much he's going to chime in, but he's here. He'll always provide insights. He always provides great insights. But I have this story, essentially, that I need to get off my chest. And you guys have heard bits and pieces of it, but I feel like it really needs to be talked about in the bigger picture and put into context. So here we go. I still play. I love this game called Mexican Train. If you haven't played it, it's a dominoes game where you match up the end of your domino to the domino that's already out there. And you don't have to make fives or tens or anything. It's just a matter of getting rid of all your tiles. And it's this really fun game. And it turns out that I played it for a long time just the way we played it with my family, the way we always did it, as we've been hearing too much lately. And I'd win some, I'd lose some. You know, it was all a pretty even distribution. And I'm playing with some other people one time, and there's a rules question, and instead of, like, I wasn't positive. And so I went and I looked up the rules, and I realized that I've been playing the game wrong this whole time, that I have not been playing by the appropriate rules. And so what did I do when the correct rules were brought to my attention? Well, you've listened to this podcast long enough that I'm sure you know that I immediately started playing by the proper rules because I am a rules guy. And, you know, I could have said, well, that's the way I've always played and just kept playing that way, but I didn't. And Mexican Train is my own game. I own it. Nobody can force me to play it a different way if I don't want to. It's my game. There's nothing on the line. There's no money. But that's the way we always did it is not a reason to keep doing it that way. So in my breaking the rules of Mexican Train, it wasn't done maliciously. It was done out of ignorance. And that's why I didn't always win. Now, there's another scenario with violating the rules. And in this scenario, if you ignore the rules and you keep ignoring the rules and it keeps working out in your favor and you keep winning, there's a word for what that is. That is called cheating. And cheating is very different because when you're cheating, you don't want to get caught. You don't want to say. You don't want people to look at what the rules are. And as per our last episode, I presume this one I'm recording now will be recorded next. The cheaters, you know what they want you to do? If you find the rules, they want you to shut the fuck up. And that's not who I am. So in my own branch, all these stories you guys have been hearing out of my branch, the mistakes are showing this distinct pattern. The people in charge keep making mistakes, and the mistakes somehow keep favoring them. The election improprieties that favor the incumbents. You know, like, for example, the notice for our nominations that was hidden away on page 5 of our state newsletter, that holds down the competition. Having less competition favors the incumbents. In fact, a few incumbents won without even having to run against anybody because the competition is held down. We had a nomination that was rejected because in its written acceptance, the person didn't certify that they hadn't been in management. Guys, that is the first job of the election committee when the election committee starts. You know, that very first thing they do is make sure that all the candidates are the appropriate candidate. But instead, our union president just rejected that nomination out of hand, and that person had every right to run for office. Having less competition, who does that favor? It favors the incumbents. And it goes on. You know, a big chunk of our ballots were sent out standard class mail. And so a lot of them probably didn't even get to their... In fact, we know that a lot of them didn't get to their destinations. A lot of them wound up into the UBM. A lot of them probably got discarded because they were standard. And so that means less votes. That lowers turnout. And who does that favor? The incumbents. The good old boys. Again. And isn't it weird how this pattern seems to be developing? You know, our return envelopes for our ballots for our local branch election didn't have postage on them. That puts a barrier to voting, so less people could vote. Lower turnout favors the good old boys. What a coincidence. So, Michael and I don't want to forget that you're there. Michael, we started asking questions. Questions that we have every right to ask. You know, questions like, what did the branch actually order when it ordered the ballots? How did we decide that we were going to use this printing company? Who approved the expenditure? These are all legitimate answers or legitimate questions that any union member has a right to know. And we couldn't get answers. We asked the chair of the election committee. I mean, he should know, right? He's in charge of the election. Not only did he fail to answer, he told us to stop asking him.
Stop harassing him.
Yeah, stop. Yeah, technically he told us to stop harassing him. Yeah, that's right. So, harassing. And I want to read to you what I wrote to him. This is the email that prompted the response of stop harassing me. Redacted. Might as well keep calling him redacted. Redacted. This issue seems like one that would be easy to resolve. The decision to use such and such printing company would be made by the election committee, of which you are the chair. This expenditure is presumably above the $500 limit of what can be approved by the executive board, and I cite the rule, and would thus fall under the NALC constitution, and I cite the rule there, and dispersed by the treasurer, and I cite the rule there. Further, such expenditure should have been brought before the branch for a vote, as outlined in the NALC constitution, and I cite the rule there. The necessity of having an election does not constitute a blank check for the branch to spend as they wish. Expenditures must still be approved. It's possible that this expenditure was approved by the branch, and I simply don't remember it. If so, at what meeting did we vote to approve it, and what was the set budget? Michael's question could be answered by sharing the invoices or estimates that were presented to the executive board for their approval prior to contracting with the printing company. Michael has asked a series of legitimate questions regarding the expenditure of branch finances, none of which were addressed in your response. What services precisely did the branch contract from a printing company? I understand that you would not have a record of payment since that is a function of the branch treasurer. Oh, so I got to step out of this here for a sec, because that's one of the ways they kept trying to dodge the answer is they would say, oh, well, we don't have an invoice yet because we haven't gotten billed yet. But dude, we kept asking, like we weren't asking for that. We were asking for what was ordered and they would not answer.
Yeah, because, you know, they're not getting paid yet.
Right.
So we wanted to get the what was ordered, the ordered form.
Yeah.
And if there is an invoice where the company's charging us, we'd like to see that also.
Right.
And we still haven't gotten the order form.
Right. We have not gotten the original order, but we have seen the invoice, and yes, the invoice is damning.
Yes.
And I talked to the people down at the printing company, and they said, yeah, the invoice is accurate, and including who ordered it.
Mm-hmm.
And so, in fairness, you know, to these questions, it turns out that maybe the election chair didn't know. But he...
Oh, no, he knew because he allowed...
He had, right, he let it happen. And he could have easily said here that, hey, I didn't do this stuff, the branch president did, but he's been... Well, we're going to get into that.
Yeah.
All right, so I acknowledge. I understand that you would not have a record of payment since that is a function of the branch treasurer. Michael has sent a similar email to treasurer to see her record of payment and the invoices slash contract between our branch and the printing company. As chair of the election committee, what services did you contract for with printing company? What fees for service were presented to the executive board for approval? That information should be sufficient to answer Michael's questions. And I'm going to step out again because, yeah, this information was available at that time. And we didn't only ask the secretary. There is a laundry list of people who are CC'd on here, and at least one other person who's CC'd could have answered these questions.
As we found out.
As we found out, yeah, but they are stonewalling. To continue, the last paragraph here. Allow me to address the accusation that is being leveled at branch president. I don't remember writing this. Oh, frankly, it's a conspiracy theory that surmises the reason his campaign... Okay, that's this part's neither here nor there. Again, I reiterate at the bottom, specifically, what services did the branch contract with the printing company? So he writes back, Michael and Alan, again, I have nothing to do with the payment to the printer. The printer will bill the branch. Please stop harassing me about this. And, dude, that's not what we asked. We asked what was ordered. We made our questions real clear. And they ain't about answering those questions. Now,
here's where some of the stuff that, like, you mentioned. So it says that we've asked the president.
Yeah.
We've asked the treasurer. And they all said to get hold of the election chair.
That is correct.
And so we're at the last person to get answers from. And then he's there saying, oh, don't harass me.
Right. Yeah, so that's exactly right.
So in reality, what do we got left to do?
Yeah, and that's why the charges had to be filed, because the dude, the one person who they kept pointing at, like, dude, it was reasonable for us to believe the election chair did it, because other members of the executive board were pointing at the election chair.
Yeah.
Yeah, I believe they call that dishonest.
Yeah, well, you know, we try to get the right information.
Yeah.
But here's the thing, the president, and of course the treasurer, she had no idea, because she said she never even got an invoice or nothing.
Yeah. Okay. Right.
And later on, when that was her response to find out about it, she went and got the invoice and found out that it was
And then
our president who ordered it.
And she was not shy about sharing this information that we have every right to.
Yeah, because this breaks the law. And so she didn't want to get blamed for this breaking the law. Yeah. So she made sure everybody got that information.
Dude, yeah, because this is spending branch funds without proper approval, and that's not okay. So it raises these questions. Do you know what kind of people don't want to answer valid and reasonable questions? Do you know what kind of people will go out of their way to avoid answering basic, direct questions about their basic responsibilities? Well, it keeps going. When the election chair told us to stop contacting him or harassing him, we filed charges to investigate the apparent wrongdoing. We wrote up those charges in October. The election chair should have been served in plenty of time for the November meeting. But amazingly, he went on vacation.
Oh, because he quit.
And he quit. Yeah, he did both. He quit and he went on vacation, which means he couldn't be presented.
Supposedly he went camping.
Yeah, but then we also heard, oh, he had heart trouble or something and got sick. Or
I've heard
multiple stories.
I haven't heard anything about that. All I've heard on that part is that he went camping.
He went camping.
And he was nowhere with the phone, so he can't be contacted.
Yeah,
basically, that's what our secretary said.
Yeah.
That he went camping to a place where we cannot contact him.
That's right. And so that meant that he couldn't be served with his charges.
That he had a week to do.
Yeah. Yeah. So the guy who was supposed to be running our election went on vacation the week of the election. And that's a hell of a coincidence.
Which is funny, because wasn't the election chair supposed to count the ballots?
Yes, of course.
So it's not like he planned it to
He should have expected to be there. So yeah, it's a hell of a coincidence. But in fact, it's exactly what somebody would do if they wanted to avoid answering the questions that inspired the charges. So then, at the meeting where the election chair was supposed to be there, the good old boys tried to tell us that we couldn't ask questions at all about the election. They even told you what, Michael, if you tried to answer questions,
They'll file charges against me.
And that you would be out of order.
And that I'd be out of order, and they'd file charges against me and threatening me.
Yeah.
Because we were going to be asking questions.
Right. So we have every right to ask our branch officers questions about the performance of their duties.
My answer to that at that point was it's like, hey, since we did not file charges yet, because you didn't bring it up to the charges yet, so therefore we can talk anything about it beforehand.
But dude, even if they had been filed, there's still no prohibition against this. Talking is protected speech. And so instead of that, the president used these charges that were pending essentially against the election chair as an excuse to avoid answering questions about what happened. Because every time somebody brought up one of these valid questions to him, he would say, oh, well, there's charges now, and so I can't talk about that. Bullshit, you can't talk about it.
And so we obviously didn't listen to that, so we started asking questions.
Yeah, and then the whole branch started asking questions, and they don't want to answer.
So who mentioned the redacted name?
The branch president.
Yeah, it wasn't me or you.
There were charges against it.
They brought it up. We did not.
Yeah. So now our questions had to wait until the December meeting. Or the charges. Yeah, the charges had to wait until the December meeting. Yeah, that's right. So if the good old boys are stonewalling and attempting to avoid answering the question, well, credit where it's due. They're doing a good job of it. So at that meeting in December, the charges against the election chair were finally read, along with the charges that the election chair filed against Michael and me, also known as retaliation for protected speech.
So saying that we're talking about him.
Yeah. Yeah.
But we never mentioned his name.
No, that's true. Mm-hmm. Yeah. In the episode that they cite. Yeah. We never say his name.
In fact, they
haven't said his name here either.
And they couldn't cite anything that we violated on either.
Right.
So there was nothing that they mentioned on that charge that we broke any rules, except that we're talking about him.
Yeah. So the charge is for the November 4th episode of Classes of Mail. So if you want to go back, I think it's entitled More Election Shenanigans or something like that. You can go back and listen to it. And I have it written here, but we skipped ahead to it. Yeah. In that episode, we never even said his name. And it is not easy to defame someone when you don't even say their name. It's almost like we weren't even trying to defame him. It's almost like we were talking about the job one of our union officers was doing in his official capacity as a union officer.
And hold him accountable.
Yeah, that is exactly right. And that type of speech is legally protected. Not only are there labor laws about it, but there's also NALC policy that prohibits the issuance of discipline for engaging in protected activities. And we might as well say the phone call that we just got where we had to pause. It turns out that the Department of Labor sent a letter to our election chair, the person who brought these charges against us.
Oh, you mean the one that I filed and you filed?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And I guess there's some movement on that because this absolutely, plainly, clearly violates labor law. And dude, this is another situation, like we talked about in our last episode, where I brought this to the attention of the good old boys first. Hey man, you might want to rethink this because this violates labor law and NALC policy. No.
Yeah, just to give people some information about the NLRB, National Labor Relations Board, when you file a charge, they actually put in the basic stuff that people violate, okay? Mm-hmm. And I guess our branch offices violate at other unions too, because that was one of the number one thing that was on
what, protected speech?
Protected speech on the Labor Relations Board site.
Yeah, well.
So obviously it doesn't happen just with us.
Yeah, and since when have the good old boys been interested in abiding by the rules? So we got...
Here's the thing. We didn't want to do this.
No, we just wanted our questions answered. And I think I'm going
to
get to that.
We gave them many chances to drop the charge.
Yeah. Yeah, right. That's exactly right. Yeah, before we went to the labor board. Right. Mm-hmm. We made every effort. I even sent the branch president an email that had a copy of the NALC like job poster that says, hey, you can't do this. Mm-hmm. And it didn't matter. Mm-hmm. Didn't matter. Yeah.
We even told that to our secretary.
Yeah.
And our secretary said, well, we're going to continue with your charge.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Oh, okay.
So in addition to talking about the election chair.
This is after we told them they're violating the NLRB rules.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So in addition to being charged for talking about the election chair on the November 4th episode, we also got charged with having co-signers on the charges that we brought. I guess they think that charges have to be brought up in a solitary fashion, like on an old typewriter in a basement. Maybe they'd have preferred that the 50 people who signed on brought 50 separate charges. Like somehow that would be better. And the most galling part, and I know we've already touched on this, is that we were charged with asking questions about the election at the union meeting. Dude. So if you want to hear the entirety of the charges against us, then you can listen to that on the Classes of Mail episode. That's part 3 of the Wild, Wild Branch meeting episode. And it is worth noting that in the charges that were filed against us, they do not cite a single rule. Why do you think that is, Mike?
Because we didn't do anything wrong.
That's right. There is no rule that we broke. Yep. But again, since when have the good old boys been interested in the rules?
Right. Since they can't follow the bylaws or constitution.
Yeah. So it's pretty clear that the charges against Michael and me are retaliatory. They're an attempt at strong-arming us, an attempt at leverage.
By the way, in the post office, who likes to retaliate?
Management.
Oh, so they're acting like managers.
Yeah, okay. Add it to the list. Mm-hmm. So, again, this is an attempt to strong arm us, and we don't even have to speculate that that's their purpose, because the charges were put exactly to that end. The branch secretary actually called me at one point offering me a deal, and that if Michael and I drop our charges against the election chair, that he'll drop the charges against us. Now, remember, the only reason we brought those charges in the first place is because the election chair wouldn't answer our questions about the improprieties in the election. So if we agreed to that deal, the election chair might never have to answer those valid and reasonable questions. You see a pattern here? So what kind of people don't want to answer valid and reasonable questions about their actions? And what kind of people go out of their way to avoid answering basic, direct questions about their official responsibilities?
Well, you went a little further. I'm saying is that they, when...
Let me just go on. Or do you want to talk about it?
So the deal that they talked about.
Well, the first deal we just said was that we both dropped charges.
Yeah.
But we didn't go for that.
Well, Alan called me and said, "Hey, Michael, they're asking if we should accept this deal." And I'm like, "Oh, hell no." The only deal that I'll accept is he'll explain exactly why he did what he did to membership. Right. And then I'll be okay with that.
Right. That he'll answer our questions.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And I told the secretary, we want him to answer our questions honestly and on record.
Yeah. And they completely refused. And they said, "Well, we're going to hold a charge against you anyway."
Right.
Then.
Right. Exactly. And so when I brought this up, that dude, we just want him to answer our questions and answer them honestly. And the branch secretary said back to me, "Well, there's a time and a place to answer questions honestly." Yeah, there is. The first time they're asked. They ain't about that. So
I got a question on that. Does that sound like integrity?
No, certainly
not. Does that sound like honesty?
No, that's hiding. That's deception.
Isn't this something that our branch president put on the newsletter about the being honest and have integrity?
There was something like that. Yeah.
Yeah. It sounds like it's not us.
No, I think he doth protest too much.
Mm-hmm.
So with that in mind, you know, we made our counteroffer that they don't even have to drop their charges against us. Because unlike them, we're actually totally comfortable defending those charges in front of the branch. In fact, I'm looking forward to it because the law and the truth are on our side. And that's what innocent people.
And what law is that?
Yeah.
Freedom of speech.
Right. Yeah, right. The LMRA. The NLR, you know, whatever.
Well, it's all those. Really, LMRD. It's our Constitution, freedom of
speech.
Yeah,
and that too. Yeah, and that too. That's exactly right. So, the deal of, you can just answer our questions honestly. No, they didn't take that deal. What kind of people don't want to answer valid and reasonable questions about their actions? What kind of people will go out of their way to avoid answering basic, direct questions about their official responsibilities? It's quite a puzzle. So the charges remain in place, and we just had to wait for the investigating committee to do their work, and then everything would come out at the January meeting, which is tomorrow, as we record this. You'll hear this after the meeting. Funny how we thought that was going to be the case, because a few days ago, I got a call from the branch secretary telling me that the charges were going to be delayed to the February meeting. Now, luckily, the election chair, when he made his charges against us, was kind enough to reprint all of Article 10 in the charges, because he had to fill the blank paper with something. He couldn't cite any rules because there aren't any. So we filled the page with Article 10. And I want to read to you the relevant part. So in Section 1 of Article 10, it reads that it talks about the charges and what the charges mean and how you decide whether they're guilty. And it says, "These determinations shall be made by the members present and voting at the next regular branch meeting, after which said charges were read to the branch." So the charge of December, so that means the Constitution says this shall be made at the next meeting, which would be the one that is tomorrow as we record this. "The vote regarding any of the above matters may be continued once by motion to the following regular branch meeting." So at the meeting, anybody can make a motion, but then Michael, who votes on the motion?
General membership.
Yeah, everybody who's there votes on the motion. Please note that it does not say in here that the branch secretary can just make that decision unilaterally.
Including investigative committee.
Yeah, that's right.
They have to ask the membership.
That is exactly right. The membership decides whether or not those charges are going to be heard. And so, dude, once again, we got this branch secretary going rogue, doing stuff that's way outside of his responsibility. And so that is Article 10. So getting back on here. So it's pretty straightforward. The vote can
and
be.
That wasn't our charge letter, the Article
10. Yeah, dude, they wrote it like they fucking took the time to write it. Why not read it?
Okay. So that means if they know this rule, it also means now, before we can say is they didn't know anything about it.
Right.
But now, since they wrote it down, they know about it and they're not purposely violating it.
Dude. And we know that the branch secretary has read the rule because he had to read it out loud when he was reading the charges.
So now they're purposely breaking the rule now.
Yeah. So, yeah, the vote can be delayed once by a motion, not just by a good old boy saying so, not even the goodest oldest boy. But since one of the good old boys has been interested in the rules. So the goodest oldest boy made his decision. Charges are going to be delayed. Article 10 be damned. Apparently the branch secretary is above Article 10. So then I asked the branch president, because again, I'm trying to do this in a, you know, in a way that they can give them every opportunity to do the right thing. So I bring this to the branch president. I'm like, hey, dude, I don't think the branch secretary has the authority to do this. Can I get a ruling from you on this? And he wrote back that I agree with the decision. And that was it. And, you know, that my appeal is denied. And, dude.
So, are you saying our branch president has decided that it's okay for secretary to break the rules?
That's exactly what. I'm not saying that. He's saying that. The branch president himself is saying that. Okay. And isn't that something that, of course, the branch president agrees with the charges being delayed because he has a vested interest in the questions about the election not being answered?
Because they don't want to bring up that, oh, I'm sorry, the election chair allowed our branch president to order the ballots the wrong way to favor him.
Yeah, right. All of this keeps coming back to that same thing. Mm-hmm. Right. And that's how you know that it's not just honest oversight. Because all the rules break the same way. They all favor the same people. And these are all the same people who have absolutely no interest in answering these questions about what happened and are doing everything they can to avoid it.
And this is where our branch president decides to put on the newsletter how that we are being disingenuous and no integrity and no honesty, yet he's doing the thing that he's saying.
I've got it right here from his article. Yeah. Take comfort, Michael, and dear listener. I quote, I assure everyone, the branch leadership has character and integrity, end quote. So, yeah, good to know. It shows, doesn't it? So that's what's going on. That's what leads us into the branch meeting, which for us is tomorrow. For you, it will be in the past. The vagaries of time travel always astound me, as podcasts are concerned. And maybe we'll get Michael back over to go over what happens
in the meeting.
At the meeting, yeah, because it's going to be an interesting one. There's no doubt about that.
Well, we're doing that on Sunday because of Broncos and Bills.
Oh, yeah,
playing,
that's right.
And I'm Broncos fan, and Ellen's a Bills fan. How ironic that happened.
Dude, yeah, isn't that something? So, hopefully we go to Johnny Max and watch it there.
And then do another podcast about the meeting.
Yeah, that's not a bad idea, actually. After the game's over, we'll come back here and do that podcast. Yeah, because you already got to be on this side of town.
Yep.
So, guys, that's what's going on. Go Bills. Hope they crush the Broncos.
Go Broncos!
Yeah. I already told Michael that literally every time I've gone to this fantastic Bills bar here in Las Vegas called Johnny Max, every single time, the Bills have lost.
So, I hope he continues.
Yep, exactly. All right, guys, so thanks for listening. Consider yourselves up to date, and I will catch you all next time.